again, everyone, and welcome. Welcome. It's the Thursday edition of the Daily Caller podcast. It's October 10th, 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Lots of ground to cover today. A billion stories going on. There are a billion stories in the Naked City, and we'll get to as many of them as we can in the next hour. As always, you can email me, Derek at dailycaller.com. If you want to enter to win a signed copy of Jerome Hudson's book, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know. I have three signed copies I'm giving away this week. The drawing will be tonight. The deadline, the drawing, I'm not sure. It'll be sometime tomorrow night or sometime tonight, probably tomorrow morning. But the deadline to enter, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There you go. 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you. I appreciate it. If you could tell somebody today to subscribe to the show, that would be awesome. You do that every day. Your word of mouth is the only advertising we got. So thank you for that. God, where to begin? So many things to talk about. I thought I had some more housekeeping things to talk about, but actually I do, because you guys have been so good and so awesome in supporting the Patreon account. I'm surprised that anybody did it, to be perfectly honest with you. And I appreciate each and every one of you, because it's nuts that I'm shocked every time somebody listens to this. To be honest with you, that anybody listens to this, and that it grows, and that it's growing, and it's organic, and there's no giant company behind it, and no network of people behind it, and I have no billionaire patron, that it is just me and an iPad and some cats, and some, well, the kids are asleep, but that's generally what it is. I'm just a guy with happen to have an interesting resume that would be a freaking novel if I had ever write it out honestly, and that you guys listen and you support this show, I appreciate it. Special shout out to Caleb Quisenberry for being a patron at the level that gets the shout out, because that's awesome. You're all awesome. I don't care if it's a dollar. I just appreciate all of it. It's patreon.com/Derek Hunter podcast. Okay, enough begging. Somebody was like, what are you going to get new equipment for? I'm sitting here holding a mic, and every time I move it, you hear that? You hear that noise? That's not good. And if I get too close to it, it's a problem. If I'm too far away, it's a problem. There are lots of problems that I'm able to sort of compensate for in editing, but the editing software I have is freeware too. So that's what I'm shooting for. Plus there's, you know, if we can get it going, I'd like to maybe do a YouTube component. So we shall see. I don't know. It's a crapshoot, like I said. But appreciate everybody for chipping in. And feel free to continue. Okay, let's get on with... Oh, by the way, if you requested a signed book plate, they all went in the mail yesterday. So they're on their way. They're out there. They're coming to you. It's up to the post office now. Oh, where to begin? Where to begin? It is every day. There's just more ridiculousness. We have the NBA throwing Americans out for holding signs and keeping quiet, just holding signs in support of a free Hong Kong. We have Matt Lauer was a bigger pervert than we'd originally thought, and Hillary Clinton was intervening on behalf of Harvey Weinstein. What? I thought she was a believe all women type of person. But, like I said, we've got that. And I want to talk about the serious situation that has a lot of conservatives very, 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 very upset. And what I'm going to say is going to keep them upset. And I don't care, because it's what I believe. But first, a word from our sponsor, Life Change Tea. Let me tell you about Life Change Tea. It is a game changer. Since I've been drinking Life Change Tea, I feel so much better, and I can't tell you how much more energy I have. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, and here I am, wide awake. How does it work? Life Change Tea is a proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse designed to rid your body of harmful intruders. It cleans you out, basically. It's the tea that makes you go. You got to get that stuff out of you. It stays in there an incredibly long time. Let's face it, our food was different 60 years ago. It was minimally processed, free of pesticides, nourishing and healthy for our bodies. Today, not so much. GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, heavy, heavy processing, which is horrible. they've depleted the nutrition from our foods. And with what's in you, it makes it even harder for your body to absorb what nutrients are in our foods. It's no wonder you feel so run down. Well, try it for yourself. Go to GetTheTea.com now. That's GetTheTea.com. Get ready for more energy. I drink it every day. There's literally a gallon of it up in my refrigerator right now. Life Change Tea is not available in stores. Go to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. Boom. You get your shipping costs taken care of. Give it a shot. What have you got to lose, ladies and gentlemen? Okay, I want to talk about the Syria situation, because there's a lot of pearl clutching going on over the president's decision to withdraw U.S. troops from the Syrian border, from northern Syria, and trust the Turks to go in there and or to maintain peace, to make sure that, and to promise, to pinky swear, not to slaughter the Kurds. The Kurds are the better guys in the situation. I'm not sure there are good guys, but they're the better guys. They have been fighting with us against ISIS, and we are grateful for that, and we should be grateful for that. But, and this is where I'm going to catch hell from people, but I don't care. How long do we have to stay there? Can we be? Can we just ask? Are we even allowed to ask that question anymore? How long do we have to stay there? Is it forever? If the answer is forever, at least be honest with us that the answer is forever for some of these people to be placated, because it doesn't matter when we leave. The ethnic and tribal hatreds that have been simmering there for millennia will return. Same goes for Afghanistan. It's my same argument as Afghanistan. We've been in Afghanistan now for 18 years. Enough. Okay, enough. Yes, there is a possibility that the Taliban could come back in and take over Afghanistan and then re-oppress the people. And I think it's a great thing that the girls of Afghanistan are now able to go to school, able to learn, not pieces of property. That's a wonderful thing. But do we have to stay there forever and have our soldiers picked off one at a time? Because otherwise they'll revert back to their Stone Age behaviors? Or do we say, well, I don't know, pick a random number. After 18 years, do we step back and go, okay, if you don't choose this life over the life you had before, and you let those people come back in without, you know, fighting them tooth and nail, you get what you deserve. I know that's not politically correct. I know that it's going to piss off the conservative intelligentsia and the pinky out tea sipping club. I don't care. Enough has to be enough at some point. And a lot of people, I saw this argument floating around, we're still in Germany. We have tens or almost 100,000 troops in Germany. There's a couple of reasons. We are, first of all, allies with Germany. Secondly, we don't really want Germany to get a military again. See history if you need any explanation as to why that. Plus, we do need a presence there. We have a presence in other areas of the globe. We don't need to occupy others. Afghanistan was a target because of 9/11, and that the Taliban, when they were in charge, were harboring Al-Qaeda. We have taken care of that problem, at least for now, and you'll never, unless you're willing to really simply bomb the living crap out of everyone, mean kill everyone you come across, you are not going to be able to stomp out radicalism in Islam or anything, anywhere in the world. That's just not possible. You cannot kill an idea. So there's always a possibility that it could come back. Should we forever occupy everywhere in the globe where they exist because there's a possibility that they could return? I don't think so. And if the Afghan people and the Afghan government, after 18 years and countless billions of dollars, can't hold on to power, if the people who have experienced at least a taste of freedom don't want to fight for it, are not willing to fight for it, then why the hell should we? You know? And yes, there will be some people who do want it and will be oppressed and could likely be executed should the Taliban come back into power. But we are not obligated to stay there forever to protect that anomaly. People, after a certain amount of time, have to be expected to stand on their own, to take care of themselves. That was the mentality behind welfare reform in this country back in the 90s. Like, okay, after 5 years, you should be able to find a job. How about you do that? Why not apply that logic elsewhere on the planet? Same with Syria. Syria is a hellhole. Syria is a pit. Assad is a monster. But if we're not going to go in there and bomb the living shit out of them and kill them and impose something on them, if we're going to pussyfoot around, then we got no business being in there. If we're not, we should do the same with ISIS. There's these stories. Oh, my God, there are 10,000 ISIS fighters who will be released or could be released if the Turks go after the Kurds. Well, I can't say that. I would say kill them. But you can't say that. Look, if you join a terrorist organization that terrorizes people, that kidnaps women and girls and forces them into marriage, I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for you if you find yourself on the business end of a rifle for your crimes against humanity. Sorry. But I also don't want to sit over there forever and have our troops over there forever to make sure you get three hots and a cot and are taken care of. You're off out of commission. If you go back to the battlefield, then we'll see you there. I wish we would have... See, this is what drives me nuts. I'm not convinced that we could win World War II today. I really don't think we have the public will for it. I don't think we have the stomach for it. First of all, 40% of the population would be actively rooting for the Germans. They just would. The progressives of a feather stick together. But once the reports, I mean, you know how many people died on the day of the D-Day invasion? That would be the headline, not Allies successfully invade France. It would be X number of thousands of troops died in one day. Horror as this, and that would be the pictures. It's all about the framing. To help win the war, to help demoralize the German people, we leveled Dresden. We destroyed the city of Dresden. It's part of a psychological war as well as some strategery in there. We couldn't do that today. While the military would be absolutely capable of doing it, but our media would be aghast, and they would stir up public sentiment against it back home, which would then have politicians running for the hills to hide from it. Oh, no, this is an outrage. We must announce this. We must impeach Franklin Roosevelt. Do you know what we did to Dresden? My God, this is an outrage, and it shall not stand. We must convene war crime tribunals. They would never stop. They're not on our team. They're not on our side. And I don't think that the public will would be able to overcome that. So I don't think we could win World War II. I mean, don't even get me started on the island hopping in the Pacific and the number of dead there. We would lose. Well, we wouldn't lose. We would fight it so differently. We might lose. But we'd likely fight to a stalemate. Could you imagine a World War II strategy where they were just trying to push the Germans back inside German borders, where that was the goal, where unconditional surrender and absolute defeat was not the goal, but resetting the clock back to zero was? Imagine what the world would be like. It would be a disaster. Yet that is how we've fought pretty much every war since then. Actually, every war since then. The military is quite capable at destroying the enemy, the best in the world, the best the world has ever seen. The politicians are some of the worst in the world and won't let the best in the world military do what is necessary to outright win a war. So you get a situation where we're going to embed some Americans with this group of people and we're going to train them and hope for the best and hope it all works out. And we're going to just stay there forever. No, we can't. First of all, there are a lot of, blue on green or green on blue killings where the troops that our troops are training end up shooting at our troops because some of the people are nuts and really devious and evil people, the people that we're fighting. Secondly, if after a certain number of years you haven't received enough training, you're never going to be capable of it. And we have to just cut bait and leave. That's the situation I see in Syria. Stay there forever or we get out. Whenever we get out, it's never going to be good because the mentality of ISIS is still going to exist and the possibility of ISIS's return is always going to exist. So the option is, do we stay there forever or not? The president ran on not, and I believe we should not. So what's wrong with pulling out now? People are saying, oh my God, we're abandoning the Kurds. Look, if you want to feed the Kurds all kinds of weaponry, I'm down with that. The Kurds should be encouraged to take care of and defend themselves, even against our ally or NATO ally, pseudo ally. Why they're in NATO is a huge mistake. They should not be in NATO. But Turkey. Okay, Turkey has a very strong military, but the Kurds are a pretty strong military too, and they could be a lot stronger if they had the military equipment. You want to give it to them? That's fine. That would be fighting for themselves. But they are fighting over things that are centuries old, hatreds that are centuries old that I don't know if anybody alive, especially the people involved, could really pinpoint what it is that they hate. Why do you hate the Turks? I just hate the Turks. Why do you hate the Kurds? Because they're awful. I hate them. You're not going to be able to overcome generational hate. They have to do that on their own. We saw that in Iraq, where the Sunni, the Shia, and the Kurds were all forced to live under the boot of Saddam Hussein. And they didn't get along, but they weren't openly fighting because Saddam Hussein wouldn't really tolerate it. Well, once Saddam Hussein was removed, the first opportunity they got, they did not go, oh, thank God, the tyrant who has had his boot on our neck forever is now gone. We are free. They said, now I can go get that SOB who's different from me. Same thing in Afghanistan. Centuries-old tribal rivalries returned. They never really went away, but they returned with force when they didn't have to worry about offending the Taliban. If that's the way you want to live, if when given the opportunity, a blank slate for your future and all the support you can possibly handle to help you establish your country anew, and you choose to revert back to what it was centuries ago, then that's on you. That's where you get to live. That's where you have to live. And I do feel bad for the people who don't want to live that way. But the people who don't want to live that way are going to have to step up. Somebody has to be the George Washington. Somebody has to be the founding fathers of this country. If when the United States was formed, if when the revolution started, our military was all French, if we just relied on the French, how different would it have been back when the French knew how to fight? How different would it have been? We took care of it ourselves. Yes, the French helped, of course, but the philosophies behind it, the rationale behind it, and what came after once we defeated England, what came after sprang from the minds of the people who were involved from the beginning. It came from within. It just so happened that our founding fathers got it as close to right as anybody has gotten it so far. Other countries have to do it for themselves. So, Should the U.S. have pulled out of Syria? I think so. There is never going to be a good time to do it. So why not do it sooner rather than later? You want to keep the train flowing of military support? I'm down with that. Absolutely. 100%. Get it done. Keep it flowing. Let the Kurds take care of themselves. The best case scenario over there is a stalemate. The concept of mutually assured destruction prevented the world from going nuclear during the Cold War. The prospect of a stalemate war where there's just no path to victory, but it's just death, could do the same over there between the Turks and the Kurds and Assad. And they can all fight ISIS to varying degrees, whatever. I just don't think we have to be there to do it. I think our services could be better used elsewhere. Our money could be better used elsewhere. And if things really get out of control, I suppose we could always go back. It's not as though we don't have troops in the region. But sooner or later, you've got to let, you know, the mama bird, if the baby bird isn't flying yet, the parents will throw the bird out of the nest. Say, all right, you're ready to fly. You've seen how to do it. You've sort of practiced. You flapped your wings. Now it's go time. Go do it on your own. That's my philosophy. And I know there's a lot of people like clutching their pearls. We're abandoning our allies and we're leaving them to the Turks. And, you know, I hope that doesn't happen. But that's not rationale enough for me to stay there forever, to risk American lives. Be grateful to the Kurds. Send them all the military supplies that they can handle and that they need to not dominate, because there's a possibility they'll go off and invade Turkey, but to defend themselves, to make sure that nobody can invade them and wipe them out. But it's if we're not going to secure our own borders, we can't really concern ourselves with other countries' borders. Or should we concern ourselves? I don't think so. I think they have to take care of themselves. You can feel free to email me and tell me why I'm wrong, but just sooner or later, you know, it's like your 28-year-old kid still living in your basement. You go down there and you go, you know what, Junior, I want my rec room back. It's been a long time since you've worked. I get that you have a glaucoma prescription for medical marijuana, but you're going to have to do something else with your life. You've got to get out of the house. Think of it like that. Perhaps crude, but honest, and honesty, even if, or especially if crude, is better than dishonesty, in my opinion. That's why I for one, support the president on this one. I think there's never going to be a time where everybody goes, okay, do it. It's better to just do it, and get it over with. We'll never know until we try. At least we try. We should try it. And that's why I'm glad to have them as our second sponsor. Look, we're just over a year away from Election Day 2020, the most important election in American history. This election will determine if America continues down the path of greatness or if America sinks down into full-blown socialism at the hands of left-wing radicals. But we can't sit back and wait for 2020. We need you to take action now. Text the word DAILY to 88022 and receive official Trump alerts directly to your phone. You'll gain exclusive 2020 updates directly from President Trump himself. Be the first to know when new Trump merchandise is available, and you'll be able to give your input on key issues to help shape the 2020 campaign. Again, all you have to do is text the word DAILY to 88022. If Democrats take back the White House, they'll destroy the booming economy. Can you imagine a Democrat with 3.5% unemployment? They'll have strangling regulations. They will continue to prioritize illegal aliens over the safety of you and your family. And the wall will never get finished. We can't let that happen. We can't let them undo everything we've worked so hard for. Make sure you're getting your news directly from the source. Text the word DAILY to 88022. Again, make sure you text just the word DAILY to 88022. This was paid for by the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, a joint fundraising committee authorized by and composed of Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated and the Republican National Committee that is dedicated to making America great again. Let's talk about somebody who is not dedicated to making America great again, Elizabeth Warren. I told you the other day, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, about how she, well, she claimed that she was fired from a teaching job back in 1971 because she was visibly pregnant. Yes, that bulbous clump of cells was visible to her boss. She was a special needs teacher 2 days a week, and they said, hey, wait a second, you're not fat. You're pregnant. This is an outrage. Get out of my school. And fired her. Well, the Free Beacon, the Washington Free Beacon, did some actual journalism. It's kind of amazing that Elizabeth Warren could have for months been making this claim on the campaign trail, getting all kinds of sympathies and glowing press coverage because of it. And nobody in the mainstream media decided to go, well, you know what? I'd like to dig into that a little bit further, just a little bit deeper. It was too good to check. It, A, fits the liberal narrative that everybody's a horrible victim because people, men in particular, and God knows white men specifically, are history's greatest monsters. And they love Elizabeth Warren. What are they going to do? Go fact check Elizabeth Warren? Good luck with that. They're not going to do it. Well, the Washington Free Beacon said, hey, wait, I bet there's some record of this. Let's look into it. And they found out that Elizabeth Warren was not fired. She was actually given a contract for a second year. And then 2 months later, she resigned. And the board, which had unanimously extended her contract, a contract for which she was not legally qualified, she did not have her teaching certificate, but they extended it anyway. She must have done a fine job with it. The board then regrettably accepted her resignation. Now, if you're fired by a principal, you're probably not going to resign to the school board. Call me crazy. I've been fired from a lot of jobs, and none of them were like that. It's pretty unambiguous. I was either quit or I was fired. That's just how it is. That's the perils of having close to 80 jobs. You learn just about every possible way to leave a job. Leave on good terms, leave on not so good terms, leave at lunch and not go back, and everything in between. Well, this discrepancy, and even, you know, her, I'm not going to play the audio again. Go back and listen to the show the other day that had it on there. The audio from 2007 where Elizabeth Warren basically says that she decided that teaching wasn't for her, at least that teaching, and she wanted to stay at home and be a mom for a couple of years. So she refutes her own story. Still, she's told this story, and so she, her campaign, has to defend this lie. In some sense, it's an understandable position if your candidate is out there, or you're the candidate out there, telling this lie, and then somebody looks it up and says, hey, that doesn't really jive with the facts in this case. You can't just say, well, you caught me. What are you going to do? All right, I'll stop telling the story. You can't do that. So you have to double down on the lie. You don't really have a choice. But why the lie? Before we get to the latest developments, which is sickening and disgusting and another nail in the coffin of journalism, why the lie? I don't remember if I went into this the other day, but I think I can explain it a little bit better, a little bit faster now. The Democratic Party's primary this year is the Woke Olympics. It is all about who is the most progressive, who is the most super-duper uber woke. And along those lines, the left has fetishized victimhood. They've elevated victimhood status to something that should be aspired to, that is aspired to by the left. Most normal human beings don't want to be a victim. They just, nobody really should ever aspire to be a victim. And the victimhood that the left really, really elevates isn't really victim. Oh, you're a woman. Oh, I'm so sorry. What society is doing to you? What is society doing to me? You don't know? Oh, well, you're being oppressed. You know? Oh, you're a woman of color. You're a gay woman of color who identifies as a man. Well, my God, how can you even get out of bed in the morning with all that oppression on you? That sort of crap. It's a woke Olympics. Well, since victimhood status is something that is now sadly almost idolized on the left, you have this field of 15 dozen candidates over there who, in the grand scheme of things, have had pretty good lives. If you really look down at their biographies, they've had some pretty good lives. Now, that's not to say there's no tragedy over there. Joe Biden's life being the most pronounced. He lost a son in the last couple of years to brain cancer. Horrible. He lost a daughter and his first wife to a car accident. Absolutely tragic. But he's also been a United States Senator, Vice President of the United States. He's made $15 million in the last 2 years. His drug-addled son, Hunter, has made a fortune from China and Ukraine, things like that. It's not growing up, you know, growing up, I grew up in the projects. And growing up, we ate ramen noodles when we could afford them. Otherwise, we were eating dirt. There is no sad tale of woe. There is no, I woke up and there was a cross burning on my front lawn, or I was beaten up because I'm this, that, or the other thing, or put in prison unjustly, or whatever. So in the grand scheme of things, these people have had it pretty good, especially later in life. They're all fairly wealthy. You know, most of them were actually born pretty wealthy. So they don't have this connection, this emotional connection with a lot of the Democratic base inherently on one of the most important things that matter to the left, and that is being a victim. So Elizabeth Warren and other candidates, they have to create them. They have to embellish things that may or may not have happened to them in the past, to say to the audience inherently, not blatantly, I know, see, I'm just like you. I've had some stuff too, and that's why I'm so passionate and committed to making sure that X, Y, or Z never happens because I experienced a form of it. In Elizabeth Warren's case, it's that horrible misogyny that is just rampant throughout society. Oh yes, women, they just can't get ahead. God, oh, to be so oppressed. People who have been really oppressed throughout history are looking at the way that the left portrays themselves, like a group like women, and going, you think that's oppression? What are you being oppressed about? Scholarship money heaped at you. If you choose the right major that makes liberals feel, you know, good about themselves, forget it. You'll never see a bill in your life. You can just have all the money you want. Go into STEM, so we'll lower the... If you go into engineering, we'll lower the requirements for you to get in and make sure that you graduate. That sort of coddling and pandering, which is really incredibly condescending, if you ask me. But yes, the people from the past would never stop vomiting if we told them what constitutes a victim these days. So Elizabeth Warren, who's led a pretty good life, always on an upward trajectory, shall we say, able to overcome the fact that she was a poor Indian girl. Yeah, now she was a middle-class white girl who pretended to be an Indian to get jobs, get into schools, get hired by Harvard, and make a fortune for not teaching all that often. Well, that doesn't really resonate with a lot of voters. What could resonate with a lot of voters is the idea that, well, man, she's been discriminated against because she's a woman. She was fired because she was pregnant. Well, there's not a lot of video cameras around in 1971, so it's a safe bet that you could probably get away with that, except for the Washington Free Beacon decided to do some journalism on it. Now, she's stuck with the lie. Enter the media. USA Today tweeted this to a story, linked to a story. Conservatives have latched on to the changes in Warren's account of her leaving a job during a pregnancy as another example of a made-up story, along with the now infamous claim to Native American ancestry. You get the framing there? It's those damned conservatives seizing on this. Why won't they just take the word of this person, of Elizabeth Warren? She is as pure as the wind-driven snow. She would never lie. John Harwood, who was the worst debate moderator in history, the RNC was a bunch of idiots to allow this guy to moderate a debate in 2016. CNBC tweeted, quote, "Does anybody seriously believe it was not as every day as sunrise that employers made pregnant women leave their jobs 50 years ago? Get real," he says. Now, nobody's denying this, John, and this is a straw man argument. Nobody's saying that what Elizabeth Warren is saying is so beyond the realm of possibility as to be absurd. They're saying that in this case, it's not only that there's no evidence to back up her claim, it's that all the evidence that exists contradicts her claim, which is kind of important and, as a supposed journalist, should be of interest to John Harwood. It is not. Here is how CNN framed it. Quote, "Senator Elizabeth Warren's story about losing her job in 1971, once it became clear she was visibly pregnant, fits into a much larger pattern, one familiar to many women. It's the tradition of sexism in the guise of scrutiny," writes Brandon Tinsley. Again, the straw man argument. It's a pattern. It happened to people back then. So it must have happened to Elizabeth Warren. Well, forget the fact that it was in New Jersey. It's not, you know, in some super uber conservative place where those damned religious people would say, "Honey, you need to get home. You're pregnant. Go stand in the kitchen barefoot." It's New Jersey. They, again, assume that since it happened, it had to have happened to Elizabeth Warren, which, again, makes zero sense because it is contradicted by the actual evidence, the records at the time. Vox News, V-O-X News, writes, quote, "Elizabeth Warren says she was fired after telling her employer she was pregnant in 1971. In 2019, pregnancy discrimination is illegal. It still happens all the time." Bum, bum, bum. Of course, the United States is a horrible, racist, sexist, misogynistic country. The Washington Post takes the cake, however. They ran two stories yesterday on this, both defending her. Margaret Sullivan, who used to be the public editor at the New York Times, which is supposed to be the one who kind of makes sure that the newspaper is doing the job of a newspaper, not the job of a political party. They eliminated that position. I don't know why they eliminated that position. She was not doing it very well. She's a full-blown Democrat. She now writes for the Washington Post because old liberals never die. They simply get a new job with higher pay. Her story is, "The Elizabeth Warren pregnancy smear shows how poisoned the media world is." Oh, it's the media's fault that somebody did some actual journalism and looked into a claim being parroted by a candidate nonstop to establish her victim cred. It's the media's fault. She says, "A news report can be narrowly factual and still plenty unfair. And so it was with the revelation regarding one element of Elizabeth Warren's personal history, oft told on the campaign trail, that her 1971 pregnancy caused the 22-year-old to be shown the door as a public school teacher in New Jersey, an unwanted career change that put her on the path to law school and public life." The conservative Washington Free Beacon's new top editor, Elena Johnson, late of Politico and National Review, kicked off the with a controversy with a story, with a report on Monday that dug up the minutes of a Riverdale, New Jersey board showing that Warren had been offered another term and that her eventual resignation was accepted with regret. The headline, County Records Contradict Warren's Claim She Was Ever Fired Over Pregnancy. Shockingly, and here comes the spin, so hold on to your hat. Shockingly, nowhere on this date is it stamped, quote, the all-male board fired this young woman because she was pregnant and because of its deep-seated misogyny, end quote. And more seriously, nowhere in the story is it indicated that the renewal offer likely came before school district honchos knew Warren was pregnant. Again, they've cooked up a conspiracy to defend Elizabeth Warren from something that should warrant further investigation. If you notice in this whole story, in the 2 or 3 days that I've talked about it, Elizabeth Warren was asked about it by CBS News. And they had her on camera saying something innocuous. Well, that's just the way I remember it. I don't know what to say. Gosh shucks. And then her staff, her campaign staff, released statements to the news media that were dutifully reported. What hasn't happened is teams of reporters being dispatched to find out what actually happened. Going to read the meetings, the minutes of the meeting themselves, like the Washington Free Beacon did. They're reporting on what the Washington Free Beacon found, but you would think that they would go and do that and then themselves to make sure that everything in there was reported, that there was nothing contradictory in there. Also, they would try to track down some of the school board members. Now, it was 49, 48 years ago, so there's a possibility that most of them will be dead, but the spouses could be around then, some of the school administrators, some, I don't know how old the people were back in 1971 that were on the school board there in New Jersey, but there are people, I guarantee it, still alive with direct knowledge, not a spidey sense tingling about what might have happened because it was happening someplace else, who could maybe answer some questions and fill in some blanks. What is of no interest whatsoever to the Washington Post, the New York Times, or any of these rags is doing just that. The extent of their investigation, in air quotes, into this story is to take Elizabeth Warren at her word. Well, when the story is dependent or necessitates questioning the word of somebody, relying explicitly and exclusively on that person's word, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If the question at hand is this person lying? You need a little bit more than them saying, no, I'm not lying, to kind of make the claim that the story has been debunked. The other story in the Washington Post, call me crazy, I'm not a journalist, but I know that much. At least I would assume that's how it's supposed to work. It's definitely not how it's working. The other story in the Washington Post is in their business section. Why, I don't know. Maybe because they're just getting into everybody's, they're in the business of defending Elizabeth Warren. The headline, conservatives claim Elizabeth Warren lied about pregnancy firing. Women reality check them on social media. This is by a guy named Eli Rosenberg, who looks every bit the Zeta male you might expect. His argument in this story, it's supposedly a news story, but he's making an argument because he's cherry-picking things. He went through social media and found women who are older, somewhere in the neighborhood of Elizabeth Warren's age, who are saying, this happened to me, or this happened to my mother, or I know that this happened to somebody else. Some firsthand, some secondhand information. But the point of his argument is, again, what everybody has been saying. It's miraculous. It's very weird. Curious how all these reporters come up with the same angle and the same storyline and the same narrative for this story, that it was happening back then, therefore it happened to Elizabeth Warren. They don't actually come out and say that. They just say it was happening back then. Inherent is that it happened to Elizabeth Warren. But there are two articles in the Washington Post that make this argument. It's got to be good to be a Democrat. It has to be really good to be a Democrat, knowing that no matter what you say, no matter what you, if it's a lie, if it's the truth, it doesn't matter. It's not going to be accurately checked out. Nobody's going to go and do journalism. Again, some dweeb is going to run to Twitter, find some people who agree with him, and then make a case on your behalf. Now, there are as many, if not more, women on Twitter who were calling BS on Elizabeth Warren's story. They didn't get themselves a story in the Washington Post, oddly enough. The opposite is true. The opposite is always true when it comes to Democrats. They are not only not held to the same standards that Republicans are held to, they aren't held to any standards whatsoever. God, it's good to be a Democrat. It's got to feel wonderful to be a Democrat, to know that no matter what you say, no matter what you do, they got your back. Your kid makes 50 grand a month and a country he's never been to, doesn't speak the language, and an industry he doesn't understand, because you're vice president of the United States, and everybody just goes, hey, man, that's okay, that's all right, there's nothing suspicious here, and there's no reason to even look. No reason to even look. And by the way, how dare they attack his Joe Biden's son? That's just beyond the pale. By the way, those Trump kids are awful and should all be in jail. No hypocrisy there. And no, when the gatekeepers are on your side, when security's on your side, you're always going to get to go backstage. You're going to get to sit in the front row. Ah, man. Okay, let's talk about the NBA. I can't believe they're handling this situation as poorly as they have been handling this situation with China. It all started, of course, with the general manager of the Houston Rockets sending out a tweet. So controversial. That he supports the concept of freedom in Hong Kong. Holy cow. That set off a feces hurricane. It's not even a shitstorm. It's a feces hurricane where the NBA is falling all over itself. Going, no. But no, we're sorry, Beijing. We apologize unreservedly. Well, the Chinese government hated that and have started punishing. See, the NBA is in their preseason now. Again, I now know more about what's going on in basketball than I've ever known in my life because I hate basketball. But this story is so ridiculous that it's you can't help but do it. The NBA is in preseason, and some of the teams are over in China traveling around. Apparently, the NBA is wildly popular in China. They're playing, the NBA teams are playing Chinese teams, and some Chinese teams are over here playing NBA teams because the NBA makes a ton of money out of China. All the shoes are made in China by 12-year-old girls, and apparently most of their gear is made over there. They have massive TV deals because there's 1.4 billion people over there, so on and so forth. You know the story. So the NBA is now officially bowing to China. The outspoken liberal woke league that has championship teams publicly announcing they will be boycotting the White House because Donald Trump is there when they win their championship, even though they weren't invited. That's the NBA. They're cheered as being so super progressive because they're so super progressive. Their superstars regularly opine about gun control. Their coaches talk about how conservatives are awful and evil. And all of it is officially sanctioned by league officials. It's embraced. It's cheered. Criticize China's oppression over the people of Hong Kong, and suddenly, you better shut up. You don't know what you're doing. Apologize to communist Chinese. Well, yesterday, more feces hit the fan. there were after after the day before yesterday when fans were kicked out of a Philadelphia 76ers game against a Chinese team because they had signs that said Free Hong Kong. Other people at games around the United States, including here in Washington, D.C., brought signs that said things like Google Uyghurs, which is the Muslim minority in China that is currently being rounded up and shipped off to concentration camps. Well, there's video footage of it. The audio is not very good because it was recorded in a big stadium and recorded on iPhones. But security from coast to coast was taking people's political signs away from them, and when they weren't just political signs. I'm sure if you held up Obama is better than Trump, nobody would have bothered to come up to you and said you can't wave that sign in here. But if you hold up a sign that says Google Uyghurs or Free Hong Kong, your sign was taken away from you. That happened here in the United States. So the National Basketball Association is now bringing Chinese communism to the United States of America. We always knew they were kind of commies, but now we know which kind of commies they are. It's an unbelievable scene. If you haven't seen any of these videos on Twitter or on Facebook, I highly recommend, I'm sure a quick search on the internet will pull up dozens of them. Literal security guards going up to people and saying, you can't have that sign in here, sir. We're going to have to take that sign in there. And when the sign was taken and the people, in one case, started chanting Free Hong Kong, they were physically removed from the arena. This is in the United States of America, although you wouldn't know it. And if you look at the NBA's website, I went to NBA.com for the first time in my life. They have a fan code of conduct. There's video footage of a security guard saying, you can't have that sign in here. We don't allow political messages in here. Well, the NBA fan code of conduct, oddly, curiously, at least as of this time, maybe by tomorrow, their Chinese masters will make them change it. But at least as of now, does not list any political signs as being verboten. Says, let's see, that players and fans respect and appreciate each other. Guests will be treated in a professional and courteous manner by all team personnel. Guests will enjoy the basketball experience free from disruptive behavior, including foul or abusive language and obscene gestures. That's fine. Don't flip off the players. Guests will consume alcoholic beverages in a responsible manner. And then it tells you how to remove somebody who's drunk. And then you get down near the bottom. The only thing related to signs in the NBA fan code of conduct is down here at the third point from the end. It says, quote, obscene or indecent messages on signs or clothing will not be permitted. Now, obscene or indecent. Google Uyghurs, Free Hong Kong. Those, apparently, according to the NBA, are obscene or indecent messages. Free Hong Kong, supporting the concept of freedom in the United States of America, will have your sign taken into custody, and if you then vocalize what was on your sign, it will have you physically removed from the stadium. Telling people Google Uyghurs, it's a weird spelling of a word, so you probably want to spell it out for people so they know how to search for it. That is now deemed obscene or indecent. What Google Uyghurs is telling people is get more information. Go forth and learn about something going on in the world. That is obscene or indecent to the NBA now. It's a sad commentary. I want to play something for you on the, it was on ESPN. At the beginning of this, since it's video, you can't see it. There is a graphic, there is a map of China. And at the bottom of it, there are nine little dashes and a nice little sort of droopy thing. It would, If Donald Trump had made this map, it would be Sharpie Gate Part 2, Electric Boogaloo. But what those little dashes out into the ocean, out into the sea south of China represent are China's claims to the entirety of the South China Sea, which is, to put it mildly, in dispute. They're creating islands out there so they can station military out there, so they control shipping that goes through the area. It's a massive, massive power play that the United States is opposed to. The NBA used that map, or ESPN used that map, which lets you know how beholden ESPN is to the NBA and how desperate they are to remain in their good graces. But the map is not the point of this bit of audio. It's talking about the Lakers, the Los Angeles Lakers, where LeBron James plays. Now, LeBron James is the undisputed star of the NBA. Him and Steph Curry, we have a little bit of audio of him, what they say, whatever the rule is, those guys can defy it. They are too big. They're bigger than the game almost, that they can get away with just about anything if they wanted to. By the way, both of them have been kind of silent. Steph Curry tried to sort of say something about it yesterday, and I'll play that for you in a second. But I want you to hear how the worldwide leader in sports is portraying what's happening with the NBA and China, and in particular with the Los Angeles Lakers. Listen to this bit of audio. Listen to it closely. And that little rumble you feel beneath your feet is George Orwell rotating at the speed of light in his grave.
Let's switch to the NBA, Matt. LeBron and the Lakers arrived in Shanghai, China this morning after a 13-hour flight, dropping themselves squarely into the fallout from the recent tweet by Rockets GM Daryl Morey that showed support for anti-government protesters in Hong Kong.
Going to stop right there for a second. Don't you love the way they frame it? Showed support for anti-government protesters in Hong Kong. Not pro-freedom protesters. Not people wishing to not be oppressed by the iron boot of the Chi-Coms, but anti-government protesters. They choose their words carefully on ESPN. They were written into a teleprompter. That means it went through a process, and that was what they chose to do. They're sucking up to China.
Rachel Nichols now is in Shanghai and has the latest on the NBA's current dispute with China.
Well, it has been frustrating for the players. The Lakers were supposed to participate in an NBA Cares community event to benefit Special Olympics today. The government canceled that. Both teams were supposed to participate in a fan appreciation night tonight. That was canceled. Their practices had to be moved because the arena suddenly wasn't available to them. And also, they've watched signs advertising this game on Thursday disappearing from around town.
Oh my God, the poor dears. Signs promoting the game in communist China were disappearing from around town? What? Is LeBron okay? This is really the way they choose to frame this? Events were canceled. They weren't available, allowed to participate in the community. And signs were disappearing from around town. The world may never recover from this injustice done to the Lakers, all because of that evil Daryl Morey's tweet supporting the concept of liberty in Hong Kong. ESPN sniffing the throne of Beijing. Now, Steph Curry was asked about this. He's another one of the NBA superstars, one of the few people in the NBA I've actually heard of, with LeBron James. He is not shy about weighing in on anything. In fact, when his team won the championship last year, not last year, the year before, he announced almost immediately, I think even before they'd won, because it's kind of a foregone conclusion, that he didn't think that they were going to go to the White House to, you know, like, celebrate at the White House the way that teams do, because Donald Trump was president. Donald Trump is awful. He's a racist. He's a misogynist. He's a sexist. He's a this. He's a that. He is not ashamed to opine on anything from gun control to gender equality and transgender bathrooms. But when it comes to the concept of freedom for the people of Hong Kong, suddenly he takes a different kind of attitude. What you're about to hear is an incredibly wealthy man bowing to a communist government. I don't even know if they're applying pressure. I don't even know if the pressure has to be applied. I think that these lefties naturally are inclined to love totalitarianism as long as it's their team. They love dictators as long as they're their dictators. But this is pathetic. If your children look up to Steph Curry, you might want to try and wean them off of him.
You want to say publicly on certain issues?
No, I think this one just from it's a league-wide situation in our presence in China. It's just a different conversation, I think, than what we have normally. Coach talking about gun violence or gender equality or things that for us is being spokespeople for people who can't speak for themselves within our communities. That makes a huge impact. This situation is. There's a huge weight and gravity to it, and there's going to be some things that need to be sorted out, but I just don't know enough about Chinese history and how that's influenced, you know, modern society today, and that interaction to speak on it. So that's just where we're at, and I'm sure this is not going away, so we'll come back to it.
I don't know enough about Chinese history to know who's in the right there, so I don't want to weigh in on it. Maybe this is a Chinese kink over there in China. They like to be shot while taking to the streets protesting their government, so who am I to say? And until I find out whether or not that really is a fetish over there, I'm going to have to withhold my opinions on it. By the way, the United States sucks. Donald Trump's a racist. Republicans are evil. And 50-year-old men in dresses should be able to go into a bathroom with 7-year-old girls. And that's all good. But, you know, the iron boot of oppression and communism, I don't know. It's too complicated for me to understand. This is a problem with people who grew up with no knowledge of, nor any understanding of, certainly no education of, the Cold War and what communism really is, the evil that communism really, truly is. Or they're just an idiot, or they're liars. I mean, they're whatever you want to be, whatever you want the answer to be, there's no good answer. There's no one sitting back and going, That's the logical answer. You should probably, because, you know, when you've got the choice between a murderous regime and people wanting to be free, who's to say who's in the right in that one? So it could go either way. And if you say the wrong thing, why, you end up with egg on your face. God forbid you err on the side of people seeking freedom. Not in the NBA. Not in the NBA. Bowing to Beijing. It's sickening. I would boycott the NBA, but I've boycotted the NBA my whole life, so they wouldn't notice. At least I can take pride in knowing that I've never watched that crap, and I never will. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. The email, derek@dailycaller.com. You have until 10 p.m. tonight to enter to win a signed copy of Jerome Hudson's book, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know. Tomorrow on the program, I'm scheduled to interview Joe Concha, which I always like talking to Joe Concha. We'll get into the week in horrible media. God knows there was enough of that. If all goes well, which is a 50-50 proposition, I should also be sitting down with Dennis Prager on Friday, not for a video interview, but for an audio interview. Hopefully that happens. I like Dennis Prager a lot. He's an incredibly smart dude. So be ready for that on Indigenous Peoples Day, on Columbus Day on Monday. It'll probably be a shorter show than usual because it is a holiday, but it will be original content one way or the other. If the Dennis Prager thing doesn't come together, I'll find somebody else at the Values Voters Summit to interview who is just as interesting. If you care to support the show, the website is patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. If you want to complain at me and call me a sellout, the email is derek@dailycaller.com. Oh, tomorrow's Friday. Can't come fast enough. Have a great Thursday. I'll see you tomorrow.
Dropping themselves squarely into the fallout from a recent tweet by Rockets GM Daryl Morey that showed support for anti-government protesters in Hong Kong.